baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
We are very excited for today's guest. Pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays organization, Mackenzie Mueller. Welcome to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're not used to hearing that yet, are you? Pitcher.
No, not even a little bit yet.
So, Mackenzie, let's start with that, right? You started, well, let's go even further back. You've been a position ball player your entire career. You started the year in Vancouver with the High A Canadians. You were playing some outfield, some first base, and then more than halfway through the season, you converted to pitcher. You went back to the Florida Coast League. Take us through the last 6 months, because you made some major changes. What shaped these decisions, and how are you feeling about this move?
So it kind of started, we ran out of, I believe it was a end of May game, early June, somewhere around there, when Brent came up to me. It was an extra innings game. Brent Lavallee, our manager in Vancouver, and he comes up to me. I was the runner on second base in the 10th inning, and he comes up to me. He goes, "Hey, if you don't score, you're pitching the 11th." So I go out there. We go three up, three down. I don't score from second, and then I hadn't been off a mound since, I think, fall of 2018, somewhere around there, was the last time. No, not even then. Fall of 2017. So it's been
5 years ago. Yeah.
I haven't touched the mound other than play and catch a little bit at the facility here in the off season, but nothing serious by any means. And went out there, had a good outing, had a good time. And then I came back in. He goes, "Hey, if we don't score again, I'm going to need you in the 12th. So,
wow.
Sure enough, we don't score in the bottom of the 11th either. So I go out there for the 12th. And I guess I think we were playing Tri-City, had learned that I wasn't just a outfielder throwing out there. They laid down a sack bunt and a sack fly to take the lead. And then we ended up not scoring in the 12th. So my first outing was a 2-inning loss.
Unreal. So yes. After this outing, you had even surprised yourself, I'm guessing.
A little bit. I knew that, obviously I had a ton of pitching background in high school. I was a starter at my high school for 3 years. And then I pitched my freshman year. I had one inning over four appearances at Rice my freshman year in 2017. So I had pitching experience, and I think that's why Brent decided that it was a good move, would give us a good opportunity. And after that, we had conversations about, hey, that was like really good. I talked to the pitching staff, Phil Candari up there, and that just kind of got the ball rolling with everything. We started doing some more serious throwing program and plyoball routine and stuff like that throughout the course of the season. One, I'm totally familiar with it. I do it during the off season, building arm strength as an outfielder. But specifically, like, doing it for a pitching aspect and just some arm care and recovery and stuff like that. So that's why they decided to use me some more.
I mean, you only had a few innings under your belt this year, but you pitched very well. You know, you had a whip under 1.86. What was the first thing you did when you did, you and the organization sat down and were like, okay, we're going to pursue this? I'm guessing, like you said, you had a little experience with it, but I'm guessing you had to build your arm up before you really started to get in there, or were you able to just start running right off the bat there?
So basically, kind of what happened was we had a couple appearances. We were building up the arm strength while I was in Vancouver. And then my second outing was a full inning, same kind of thing. We ran out of arms. I threw a 9th inning of a game we were losing. Threw well again, so much so that Brent was getting conversations during his weekly meetings and daily meetings with, you know, player development staff and stuff like that about what's going on with Mac. How's that going? That's something we might want to really pursue. And so I made two more appearances as a full-time outfielder. And then I sat down with Brent, week end of July, I believe, was kind of when that happened. He sat down, we were talking about, hey, typical roster moves with stuff, but Blue Jays wanted to offer me the opportunity to, you know, pursue a pitching career and switch over full time, which was a little bit of a surprise. For me personally, I was expecting that to be kind of a end of the season, off season move. Hey, you get the whole off, come back to spring training, let's see where you're at. But they decided to make the move early. So I went back down to Florida. Didn't appear in a complex league game, but I was building up and working with the pitching staff down there, and then ended up getting hurt. So we're currently in a rehab process.
Rehabbing,
towards that development. So
now, Mac, there's another pitcher in the Blue Jays organization who also transitioned from position player, and I mean he's doing quite well for himself. Did you reach out to Hagen Danner at all before doing this, or was this something that the organization pointed you towards?
The organization more pointed me towards that. I believe Hagen's decision was on his own accord. He decided that for himself. This situation was more kind of decided for me, but definitely worked out in my favor because it was something that I knew that I would possibly pursue, whether it was with the Blue Jays or not, just as a personal achievement sort of thing. You know, see how hard you can throw, see if I can, you know, try to make a career out of it. It's funny. Danner was actually down in Florida rehabbing when I got down there to build up and start my throwing program. So I had several conversations with him about his process and how we were going to do it, and kind of how he felt about the whole situation and what we were looking at for the next 6 to 12 months. So
what was the biggest, I'm curious, what was the biggest difference in routine between position player and pitcher? Because I can imagine there are some growing pains in just kind of developing an arm health routine and stuff like that. I know you had some experience with that, which maybe set you ahead of Haggy. Because that was one thing that Danner did bring up with us, was that it took him a little while to figure out how to listen to his body and figure out what aches and pains to just pitch through and what aches and pains he had to, like, okay, time to back off a little.
Yeah, I think being an outfielder, I paid attention a little bit more to it because obviously, you know, you might be out there for 3-4 innings. You kind of got to stay lukewarm. And, you know, at any minute, I got to make a throw to the plate or a throw to a base and, you know, hit a cutoff man from 120, 150 feet near max effort throws. But pitching is a little bit different in the aspect that it's repetitive max effort or near max effort throws. So that's kind of where the transition has been of how do I taper, you know, low days, medium intent days and higher intent days and build myself into this routine of, okay, this is a game day. What does my recovery process look like afterwards? Because I'm used to taking care of my whole body in the sense of running and moving and, from a swing standpoint, you know, that's what I learned a lot in my first full season was how do I taper those things from a swing standpoint? When is it a good day where I can take my complete off day and then move on? How do I transition all this stuff I've learned about my body to the pitching side of things? So
are you still taking swings or are you abandoning the batting cages at this point?
So I would really like to, but currently I'm not allowed to take any swings at the moment. I think that's something that I could potentially throw into off seasons just for fun. I mean, there's absolutely no reason that I couldn't do that a little bit just for me, because besides possibly getting hurt and, you know, with the organization, but I feel like I'm an intelligent enough individual and I listen to my body enough that I'm not going to push the limits there and risk any sort of career. So
The body's such a Rubik's Cube, eh?
It is. Like, it's all over the place.
So let's talk the mental side of this a little bit, buddy, because honestly, the amount of gumption it takes, even maybe that's the wrong word, maybe more so focus to reevaluate where you are on your baseball journey. It's impressive, man. Was it weird for you going back to Dunedin from Vancouver? And how did you mentally approach that new path?
It was weird for a little bit. I ended up rooming with Connor Larkin when I got down there. He was in rehab at the time. Obviously, I played with him at the tail end of last season, and then for the majority of this season up in Vancouver. So, you know, that's nice about how long I've been in the organization. It's not like I'm brand new to everything, and I don't know a bunch of people that I've played with. You know, I spent an entire season in Dunedin, and the number of guys that roll through Dunedin at any given time, like, you get to know, at least have friendly faces. You may not be best friends with everybody,
right?
Obviously, but at least I know some of these people. So that in turn made it a little bit better. Reevaluating the whole career, though, I think it was easy for me personally because I hadn't felt the confidence on the baseball field that I felt on the mound in Vancouver in a very, very long time.
Interesting.
It was a weird switch to flip where when I pitched in high school, I pitched with such confidence on the mound that I was untouchable at times and really didn't have to worry about it. And the second I got out there and threw one warm-up pitch and dotted it in the middle of the zone, I was like, okay, that's all I needed to know. Can I throw a strike right now for, you know, Phil and Brent over there in the dugout? And once that flipped, I had absolutely no issues attacking the zone and just working through everything. It was a weird switch that I had.
What an epiphany to have.
Middle of the 11th inning on a random May night.
Man, that is so wild. So what pitchers are you working with then, McKenzie? Like, what's in your arsenal? What's your go-to pitch?
So we were mainly fastball, learning a breaking ball. I'm going to call it a slider for now, but it's definitely all a work in progress, especially with the injury. We're working back towards probably reevaluating some mechanical things and arm slots and stuff like that. So all of this could change in the next 6 to 8 months. So, and then possibly throwing in some kind of change up third pitch, mess with some stuff. But from all the people I've watched, it's nice to have the third as a show me, but where I anticipate ending up in the bullpen more often than not, that two pitches is, if you're elite with two, then you can make it a long ways.
You sure can. So, I mean, obviously health is the main goal, but going into this off season, what are you working on? Like, where do you want to be 2023 spring training?
So I probably will not attend 2023 spring training, with the rehab process. So,
how far away are you in this rehab process? What's going on? Can you talk about your injury?
I personally, I think I can. I don't know if the organization has
any. No one's going to see this. That, but,
so 2 weeks into my ramp up down in Florida, I had a little tug on my elbow, and that was like slightly concerning. I came out of a live beat. We had the MRIs done and everything like that. Doctors, training staff were fantastic. They were reassuring that, hey, it's probably just a little sprain, but the MRI said different. So I am, I think, 11, 12 weeks post-op. I ended up having Tommy John surgery about 3 months ago. So we're still 100 and something days from throwing program, and then another 6 months down the road from finishing that up. But
Tommy John, though, that's a pretty validating surgery as a new pitcher. You're like, all right, I'm a pitcher now.
guess I'm in prison. Yeah, no kidding. So I've got a pretty light heart about it now, and I think it's actually more, it might even be more of a benefit towards how well I could develop in the next year, as opposed to going back into 2023 and then trying to fight through a full season and possibly not having enough time to make that full transition prior to a spring training. I think the extra throwing program and all the work that I can put in over the next 8-9 months will be beneficial towards, actually achieving a true career out of this, and not just being a project work in progress. Hey, let's take a chance at it and see what happens. I think I can actually turn this into something.
That's a really good mindset, man. And I guess it's kind of, it's that or be miserable, right?
Yeah. So reaffirming after the injury and everything like that. And I was talking to Hagen about it, and he said the best thing that helped him was the COVID year. He said that he probably wouldn't have been half of the pitcher he is in 2021 if he had to pitch all of 2022, because he had the entire season to, hey, we're going to make a full transition with a lot of time here. And he came into 2021, I mean, probably 5 miles an hour harder, ended up pitching his way through the back end of the bullpen in high A, and, earned himself a 40-man spot for 2022. So, I think he said that was a huge benefit to his career, and that kind of helped me with the, hey, I'm hurt, I'm not going to throw for a while aspect of it, that there's a lot of things I can do and I can work on and start to think about prior to, getting back on the mound and seeing where this goes.
Well, best of luck with the rehab process, man. I know that it's not an easy trek to an easy road to plow, if you will. Even just mentally, it can be a real pain. So we're rooting for you there. As you transition to a pitcher, now you've done this before, you've played the positions before out in the outfield. How hard would it be to be a two-way player? Because Shohei Ohtani gets a ton of attention for being the superstar on both sides of the field that he is, but it's probably not even enough attention, right?
I went out there that first night and came back. We ended up losing the game, and we were, it was kind of mixed emotions in the clubhouse at the time. But immediately after that, there was several of my teammates referring to me as Ohtani for a couple months. Because it was a consistent thing. Like, I was going out there, I was playing catch with the pitchers. I was throwing a couple sides here and there, and then BP right afterwards. And I had a game in Hillsboro where I think I was 3 for 5, 3 for 4 on the night. Had a really good night at the plate playing in the outfield. And we were up 10-1 in the ninth inning, and Hillsboro started making a 6-run comeback, and we ran out of arms. So I came in with 2 outs in the bottom of the
ninth. You're like, this is my bread and butter.
Loaded. 3-for-5 night with a save.
And wow. It was
one of the baseball games of my professional career, just from a memory standpoint. Because it really did. My friend from, I don't know if you know Zach Cook or talked to him at all, but he's a good butt friend of mine in AA, and he called me. He's like, are you playing Little League right now? Like, this is something like, having fun, something we did when you were like 11 and 12. Like, you don't do this in pro ball.
I love that it's even making it through the organization, like not just the team, the Canadians you're playing on, right? Like, it's going up and down. They're like, holy shit, this guy's doing it both.
yeah so it was a lot of fun, and that stretch was a really good time. My parents actually were in town for my second outing. They had just brought me my pitching glove, and I was like, bring it to me as a joke, and I'll keep it in the locker room and in the dugout and stuff. And then Brent walked out to the mound with it in the ninth inning of that game, and I was like, sure enough, here we go. He's walking my glove out there.
So. Oh, I love it, man. So, Mac, you're a Texas boy, correct?
Yes. So actually more of a military kid. My dad was in the Air Force for 28 years. So we moved around.
Wow.
Yeah, we moved around a lot when I was a kid, but May of 2012, right before my freshman year of high school, we moved to Texas, Abilene, Texas specifically. And I've been here ever since. I had never been to Texas before in my life. I thought it was all, cowboys hunting, horses on the farm. And it really is at times, but, and I never thought I would enjoy it because we moved from Germany and I had, one of the greatest culture shocks on earth, moving from a European country and moving to Texas, who thinks they're a country themselves. So.
So is that one of the things that attracted you to baseball? I guess you were just moving all over the place and that gave you somewhere to go, or like what got you into ball?
So my uncle played in the Cincinnati Reds organization for the tail part of the 90s. I think he was drafted in 94, I believe. He was a 43rd round pick from the Reds in 94 and worked his way up to Double-A. And played for a while. And then my grandfather played up in Wisconsin, in just adult league, under 40 league, and pitched up there for a while. So baseball has been in the family, for sure, on that side. And so it was always something that I enjoyed and I did. I played T-ball when we lived in North Dakota. It wasn't until probably I was about 10 that I started to take it like super serious. Cause I played soccer, I played football, I played hockey for a little while. All across the board. And then my 11-year-old year in 2009, we went to Williamsport, played in the Little League World Series.
Nice.
Wow. Very cool.
That's awesome. I had a
fortunate opportunity to win that championship again and go again in 2010. So I went back-to-back years to Williamsport, and that was right after that was when we were like, hey, we're probably going to be moving soon. How serious are we about all of this? And that's when the focus really started to shift towards baseball specifically. I spent a summer after my seventh grade year? Yeah. So my 13-year-old summer, I spent with my uncle in Missouri playing, United States travel ball, just to be aware. Cause obviously, he's one of the better players on those teams that I was on, going to Williamsport, and one of the better players in Europe, at least specifically in the German community that we were playing in. So my mom was like, hey, are we really good enough to pursue this? Is this something that we can do? So I went and played during the summer and had a great summer and enjoyed it. So we knew that we had to be specific about where we were moving in the city, which school I was going to, which would give me the best opportunity to play and better myself and my career and get me where I wanted to go.
Kind of cool you got to see the world like that, man. That's very interesting.
Yes, 30 countries on my list.
That is unreal.
Wow.
Fantastic.
You've got to hold the record within this organization for countries you've stepped into.
Yeah. I'm up there for sure, probably.
You're up there for sure. So tell me, my guy, what your favorite thing about Vancouver was, both on and off the field.
So for me specifically, Vancouver was one of my – I enjoyed it way more than I should have. Texas boy, Canada. But there's so many, it was so fun for me because Vancouver, I think specifically has a ton of European influence in it, at least in my eyes, because you cross the border and it really does feel, you can tell it's a different country, but it still has those American influences.
Yeah.
And that for me was really, really fascinating. Just the culture and the amount of people that we got to meet. And then playing in front of the Vancouver fan base was one of my favorite baseball experiences in a very long time. Because most of the schools that I went to, we got fair crowds. But that means sellout crowds every night, May through September is just there's nothing like it. Nothing like it.
Well, how does that compare to the Little League World Series though? Cause You get some pretty good crowds out for that. Like,
yeah,
relative to being 11, those crowds must have felt massive.
When the most amount of people you've played in front of is somewhere just under 100, and you go up to the court and there's 20, you know, 3,000 people in La, you know, mm-hmm. for our Europe Puerto Rico game at Volunteer Stadium, it's shocking for sure. And you've got kids your own age or older than you asking you for autographs. I mean, Williamsport is a weird cultural experience, and the fact that most of the people in that area are treating these 11, 12 year old kids like superstars.
Right.
And in some instances, they really truly are superstars. I mean, some of those kids go over there and they make a, you know, they're highlighting SportsCenter top 10s for the next month.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. And I think it prepared me for, you know, my future. At an early age of just kind of understanding, you know, not taking the moment too lightly, but not, you know, letting the moment get to you in a way.
So we're going to take a hard left turn here, Mac. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a YouTube video floating around here of a Division III pitcher who does like a trick pitch. And basically he swings his arms out forward and the ball's in his hand, and then he goes behind his back and comes back out, and there's no ball in his hand, and he kind of shows no ball in his hand as he kind of puts the windup over his head, and now the ball's in his hand, and then he quick pitches, and the video is just like the batter just standing there dumbfounded, right? Like just blown away that he just had to take a strike on what he looked like nothing. Have you seen any trick pitches that stand out to your in your mind, or even just, I mean, we've all seen the hidden ball trick, right, with the base runner and stuff. At any point throughout childhood or even in the organization, have you seen anything kind of crazy like that?
I don't think I've had a couple instances in my career where I've been on second base and shortstop's hiding the ball behind his glove or just kind of lurking a little bit.
Yeah.
But my personal favorite is a play we used to practice in high school where we had two plays that we would either fake pick on the mound and both infielders would run to center field as if they were chasing after the ball. And then we had another play that was run exactly the same where I would physically throw it on a one hop to the center fielder on a pickoff play and try to go and throw him out at third base.
Wow.
That's probably the one that mind. I can't think of anything else that we do, but that's one of them that really stood out. I don't think we ever actually used it. I think the fake one used once or twice, but we never actually threw the ball to center field. I have no idea why.
That's kind of what's fun about high school ball, like, because you'd never get away with that in pro.
No. Screaming, hey, hold up.
Yeah. Do you follow any other sports? Like, are you a football fan or a hockey fan or follow any other teams?
I don't think I'm as passionate about any other sports as I am baseball. And even prior to, I never had a favorite team growing up. I just followed baseball collectively. I keep up with a couple sports. My parents are from Wisconsin. So we are Packers fans, I guess if you will, not religiously. If the game's available, my parents will put it on Sunday, but
right.
They're not going to go out of their way to make sure, hey, we have to have the Packers game on Sunday. But a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I just keep up with sports in general, more or less. But baseball is definitely a passion of just following players and teams and whatever's going on. It's really comfortable for me. It's enjoyable, especially with what I've learned being in professional baseball for the last 2 years.
Mackenzie, this has been just a blast, man. Really have enjoyed chatting some baseball with you and really appreciate you being so generous with your time here. We got one more question for you. You got a few more minutes here?
Absolutely.
Okay. So this is a non-baseball question, and I'm going to name some things and then you rank it between 1 and 10 one being you are not a fan of this thing, 10 being you absolutely love it. You got this complicated scoring system down?
So 10 being absolutely love it, 1 don't want anything to do with it.
Exactly. You've got it. All right.
Where'd you come up with this idea, Scott? This is brilliant. This might catch on.
Okay. So let's start with poutine. Poutine. You were in Vancouver and you don't know poutine?
No, I do not.
Cheese curds, gravy, fries.
I love cheese curds. Not a huge gravy fan, but I think on cheese curds, it might be all right. We'll go 5 there. I think I would give it a shot, and I'd have to try it first.
When you get to Vancouver, that's one you got to put on your list, bud. That's Canadiana through and through. Okay. Canadian hip-hop artist, The Weeknd.
Solid 6. Don't mind if he's on.
Not going out of your way.
A few songs I will put on myself, but not all of them, if you will.
Okay.
Hold on. While we're on the topic of The Weeknd, this has always bugged me. Shouldn't that be like reserved for a duo? Like an individual to take up the entire Weeknd with his name is just ridiculous. Like,
great.
Come on. Sorry, Scott.
All right. Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod.
I'm going to go with a 3, and I'm going to explain why I'm going with a 3.
All right.
When I was 12 and we were that Little League World Series team, we were fortunate enough to get invited to be the youth team, Field of Dreams, that runs onto the field with the New York Yankees in 2010.
Wow.
And
buddy, that must have blown your mind.
Absolutely. The starting pitcher, I don't remember who it was for the night, did not want to be on the mound. So I have wonderful pictures of me standing alone for the national anthem on the rubber at Yankee Stadium. And Alex Rodriguez, from what I can remember, was the only position player or person that walked into the dugout on that day that did not stop and at least say hello, did not stop and say hi. Derek Jeter took a little time out of his day. Robbie Cano took a little time out of his day. Nick Swisher talked to us for like 25 minutes because he wasn't playing that night. Sabathia talked to us for like 25 minutes. I mean, it was a wonderful experience. A-Rod just left turn, focused on what he was doing. I don't blame him for that because there are situations where, you know, he might be going through some things. He might be in a little rut. And he's just trying to focus on himself. So I get that. He's a little, to me, wishy-washy in, you know, just kind of who he wants to be as a public icon.
Yes.
Given his past and present. So that's why I'm going with the 3 and not a full 1 or a higher score. So
I love this rating, and I love that it's not even based just solely on who he is personality-wise. You're like, no, this is a little personal.
a little personal, but also, I mean, he was a very talented baseball player, and I have to give him credit for that. Even though I disagree with the fact that I don't think he understands how he accomplished what he did with his swing from a mechanical standpoint. Nobody swings down.
It's so funny, the superstars, eh? How they're just like, yeah, just do it. Just do this. And yeah. You're like,
you were a once generational type talent, A-Rod. Or very few people built like you. You can't just do it.
Exactly. Okay, we got a couple more here before we let you go. Barbecue.
Barbecue? What kind of barbecue? Because there are many different kinds of barbecue.
There are many different kinds of barbecue. Let's go with a good old Texas. what do they do in Texas there?
Briskets, pulled pork. Texas barbecue to me is a 9. Kansas City barbecue is a very, very close 8. I just don't get it often.
Yeah.
And then anything that claims to be barbecue that's not from the South beyond that is like,
you're like, I want nothing to do with it.
it's still good, but it's just not as good.
Love it.
Okay, last one. The Marvel Universe.
I'm going 7 for me because I thoroughly enjoyed the Avengers movies and the Avengers universe, all the Iron Mans, Captain Americas, and Thors and stuff like that. But I'm not so religious about it that I can give it a 10. There are very few things, like baseball's a 10, obviously.
Yeah. Yes. There are
a few things that can compete with in the 10 perfect score realm for me.
Now, if we had asked you this question like 4 years ago, would that number have been any higher? Like heading into the big Infinity War finale of that era, has it come down since then? Has it played out?
I think it probably would have been up a tick or two because I felt like that was the pinnacle of the Marvel Universe. And I mean, not being a super fan, just having, you know, being able to collect thoughts and have a strong opinion about just about anything. That's kind of where I'm at with that. Yeah. I mean, I've got a little Groot somewhere here on my desk.
Love it.
Honestly, Mackenzie, this has been just a blast, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We're rooting for you, buddy. Hopefully we can have you back on the show once you're healthy and back doing your thing, man.
Absolutely. I would love to. It's been a great time.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. With a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.